it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. We appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning. My name is Sean Pendergast. His name is Seth Payne. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Good morning. I'll tell you what, Sean, sometimes the best way to feel better about yourself and your own circumstances is to insult others and put others down. Time-tested.
Doing it for years.
Psychologists recommend it highly. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time doing it. Honestly, when I look at the Bears, I'm going to watch that game last night, and I'm thinking, oh, boy, here come two teams, the Vikings and the Bears, that really spent heavily in the offseason to bolster their offensive line, way more aggressive than the Texans were. If they just start marching down the fields, if both of these offensive lines look incredible, I'm gonna be miserable. For the Bears, it might have looked like that for a while, but everything kind of fell apart at the end of the game. But then I'm looking at the Bears' record, and I didn't realize they've only had one winning season since 2012.
Yeah,
That's the year they went to the playoffs.
Yep.
It just unbelievable they've turned into I guess and yes you know the Bears are bad but it's just I feel bad for the people of Chicago
way more
I
bad
and I feel see, better I, about the people of Houston
they way more bad than good in their history no doubt look the Bears are at the top of the teams that I root against in the NFL and I root against a lot of teams. It's really hard for me some of these games on Sundays, man, when I got two teams that I don't like or root against going against each other. It's like, ugh. Like the Dolphins and the Colts playing each other this weekend. Like, I think Mike McDaniel is just a little skate rat stoner, and so does Rex Ryan. We'll get to that later in the show. And meanwhile, they play the Colts, who inherently I root against the Colts because they're in the Texans division and a variety of other reasons. Ryan Poles, the GM of the Bears, is very, very high up the list of people I root against, you know, because I think he's a pub hound. I think he's more about Ryan Poles than he is his own football team, which is why I really enjoyed staying up last night to watch this Bears offensive line, which everybody was saying it's now a top five offensive line because they spent a bunch of money on it and they got Ben Johnson to direct this whole thing as the new head coach. If you only watch the first quarter of the game, you're like, well, this is clicking. This is good. Caleb Williams, 10 for his first 10. It was working, man. And if you stayed up, you would know that it did not work in the end. They were up 17-6. They got a pick six in the third quarter of that game. The Bears did to go up 17-6. And J.J. McCarthy was a mess in this game. He obviously threw the pick six. But even before that, he was not good. Like, through the first quarter, he was like 1 for 2 for 5 yards. It was bad. He looked like a guy making his first start. And then in the fourth quarter, he was excellent. The fourth
tight
quarter,
window
you go,
throws.
Yeah, and he scrambled for a touchdown to put him up 27-17, like a 20-yard scramble. You go, all right, all the stuff. I get skeptical sometimes when guys get drafted because they are, quote, a winner. Guy's a winner, man.
Yeah.
He's just with the 11th pick. Guy's just a winner. And last night, look, it's one game in, but last night, like, yeah, all those things came true. And I would say the two teams that spent heavily on the offensive line, the Bears, it looked good early. It did not look good at all late. The Vikings did not look good early, and it looked really good late. I don't know what that says about either coach. You got two of the better offensive minds in football in Ben Johnson and Kevin O'Connell, you know, orchestrating that whole thing. I will say this, compared to the Texans, that I would say the Texans had almost no moments with their offensive line. I mean, they didn't score any touchdowns, so they got one trip into the red zone. So I would say, compared to those two teams, they had no moments. I would say with the Bears and the Vikings, two teams that spent a ton of money on the offensive line, you can at least see some. They have evidence, at least, that it could work for them.
You can see, you try to look and see exactly how it might play out, where the spots of football are. And there are, you know, and this is how it always works out. You know, it's never as bad as you thought, it's never as good as you thought. With the Texans, there's some things they can build on. and with the offensive line and some positive things they did, it's just they certainly aren't like, oh, wow, this is going to be one of the best offensive lines in the league. It's certainly not like that. No. But I'm also trying to remember that, man, though, that Rams defensive front, it's just chock full of demons, man.
Yeah. Like,
that was a big test for those guys in their first day in a scheme. I'm not making excuses or anything. I'm just saying I you got to let it play out a few games to see exactly where they are.
It, on the broadcast last night in the second half, when the Vikings started moving the football, they brought this. This made me feel better about the Texans after week one, was the big impetus for the Vikings to go spend money on Ryan Kelly and Will Fries and revamp that offensive line was the playoff loss to the Rams where Sam Darnold got sacked 9 times. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that was the team the Texans played on Sunday. So that team basically forced a 14-win team from last year to say, hey, man, we need to go do some things. I'm like, all right, so that was a really good front that they played. Okay, Sean, you feel a little bit better. That was a really good front that they played on Sunday.
It was a really good front. It's not an excuse for not scoring a single touchdown
in
the game.
It's not.
And I can't I can't sit here and act like, oh, wow, well, they didn't have Christian Kirk. Once Christian Kirk comes back, it's gonna be different. There's a Christian Kirk single-handedly takes you from a 3 field goal team to a 7 touchdown team.
Totally.
Yeah, let's be honest here.
But this not good news yesterday. Cade Stover, broken foot, out indefinitely, according to the reports out there.
Yeah.
How are we feeling about Cade Stover out indefinitely with a broken foot?
I don't feel good at all, especially since he played the entire game, and you wonder, or at least it looked like.
He came out. I was watching this in my rewatch. Yeah. I'm going, okay, when? Because I had heard the news of that while I was doing my rewatch. He was in until there were 2.5 minutes left in the game. He himself got an illegal shift penalty, and that was the last play that he played in the game.
You would have thought
that he got benched for it or something, because they went 4 wide the rest of the game almost.
Yeah, and that's where which they started to move the ball too. That's another discussion. But the can we blame the illegal shift on him playing through a broken foot? I don't know. I guess the fact that he came out on that play.
Yeah.
Where he probably didn't get injured on that play, it makes me feel, with zero medical background or justification for this whatsoever, that maybe it's not that big a deal, and that he had been playing on it, and it's one of these small fractures that they just got to let heal up.
Yeah, no point
but
did he get
know
with, no
we,
point
we know with
did he get helped yeah. off the no point did he get helped off the field. I think
right.
is what you're saying. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, a Liz Frank or something seemed to be kind of like that, and that we also know that foot injuries or foot fractures can be finicky. It seems like it's never as simple as it should. Whenever you hear about, oh, it's just a small stress fracture or something, it seems like it takes forever and ever. Going back to the Kevin Johnson days. Remember Kevin Johnson? It seems like he had a foot injury that popped up once about every 6 weeks.
Totally, totally. The thing for me, like, okay, this is one of the positions where they chose to go very light on the 53-man roster. Like, okay, you got 2 tight ends. You can piece the rest of the tight end to get stuff together with bringing Harrison Bryan up off the practice squad, or Jakob Johnson can play a little hybrid tight end for you or whatever. You've got one true tight end as of today, and we'll see what they do. They've not put Cade Stover, nor have they put Jake Andrews, who, according to Aaron Wilson, is going to be out for a while with a high ankle sprain. Neither of them have been put on IR, but it's only Tuesday on a week where they don't start practicing until Thursday, so they've got, you know, everything's pushed back a day this week for the Texans, so maybe they end up doing it tomorrow or Thursday. But week one was costly to them, man. They lost their starting center, and I would submit they lost the better of the two tight ends. Like, Cade Stover was a more useful player coming out of training camp than Dalton Schultz, because Cade Stover was a monster run blocking in the preseason. And in that game, he was pretty good blocking in that game on Sunday, too.
I mean, they both got used up at times by some of those really good defensive ends. I mean, that's what happens. I mean, there's times as a tight end, as George Kittle calls it, it's the art of getting your butt kicked slowly. Like, you just sometimes have to be it's like a martial art where you're like, I think Aikido is like this. I'm not sure. Correct me, texters. But where you're just trying to use the other guy's aggression against you and slowly kind of just take away some of the oomph. And so you're not going to win every battle or be dominating unless you're Gronk or something. This is where, with the offensive line, you can even look at last night and say, okay, well, the Bears' offensive line fell apart in the fourth quarter. It wasn't worth spending all that money. The biggest problem with the Texans' offensive line right now is because you didn't really bolster it with about a lot of people that have a proven track record, the depth. It's the depth. And the reason when people are asking, why didn't they put your Scruggs in? I don't get mad at them shuffling the lineup. I get mad the fact that they have a backup interior offensive lineman that they don't feel good about putting on the field when the starting guard gets injured. It's that, yeah, you don't, if you're not going to have a bunch of marauders up front, you got to at least have some depth behind them. And the depth is really, really shaky right now. And that's, guess what? There's going to be more injuries along the offensive line at some point this season.
Yeah.
You can say that about any position group. So the depth is very, very, very shaky right now.
Yeah, it is. I mean, at least, the one saving grace with his Jake Andrews injury, it's one of the few places on the offensive line they're just going to plug in the backup. You know, they're just going to, as opposed to moving three guys around to accommodate the fact that you don't have good players on your bench. Jake Andrews is out, they'll just throw Jared Patterson in there. And that's fine. He started a bunch. He started way more games than Jake Andrews has in the NFL. So that it looks like Jared Patterson is going to be your center for a little while.
We don't really know. We've never gotten like an update on Irv Smith and when he might be completely healthy, have we?
I think they didn't put him on the IR designated to return. Yeah. He's on the regular IR, which I think means he's done for the year.
He's done for the year completely.
I
okay.
think so,
the
yeah.
initial report was that it might be designated return. Okay.
From what I remember, I'll look it up during the break. This is important now because Kate Stover's out. I remember Jalen Reed having the designation to return, and I remember Irv Smith, and there was one other they put on IR, the other IR. So
it was that confusing report because remember Aaron Wilson had said that they were going to release him, but yeah. that might be yep. on IR. And it's, okay,
yeah.
all right.
Yeah, he's on IR. He's a Texan still. He's still an employee of the Houston Texans, but I'll check. I'll check that during the break. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We're off and running on a Tuesday. We got Ross Tucker joining us at 7 o'clock today, so that'll be fun. We'll get up to speed with Ross, and we got a petty cast at 8 o'clock that is going to be one of the greatest petty casts of all time. There was so much petty floating around the world of sports over the last couple of days that we'll get to. Did my rewatch yesterday. We've just got some leftovers, and then we'll flush this Rams game. But I've got some observations from my rewatch, including just some incredible versatility in one area for the Houston Texans that I think they want to get rid of this versatility. We'll tell you what that is coming up next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, let's not exaggerate our words here early in the morning, texters. 9631 on the text page. I'm stunned that our tight end room is so bad that a Cade Stover injury is being treated like we've lost Tony Gonzalez. The guy should have been cut after last season. All right, two things. One.
But the guy should have been cut after last season.
Yeah, that's a bad take. That's one of the things.
Yeah, that's a horrible take. That's an incredibly bad take.
Should have been cut.
Yeah.
He's a fourth-round pick who did some decent things as a rookie. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Why are you still drunk?
Did we treat it like it was like they lost Tony Gonzalez? It was literally like the third thing. We went to it after we talked about Monday Night Football last night.
Yeah.
At what point were we treating Cade Stover like he was Tony Gonzalez? It's news. It's the one news item for a team that was off yesterday, the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
Team that you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610, by God.
Listen, pal. If you were upset about the Texans perhaps only scoring three field goals in that game, do you think that the loss of some of the starters or guys who play a lot is going to make it a better team?
Right.
Wow, this is a good thing. Hopefully all 11 starters get injured because surely there'll be a better football team after that.
Cade Stover, second highest PFF score on the offense on Sunday.
Yeah. Right, which isn't, again, we're not treating that like that's a Tony Gonzalez type of performance or what have you.
But he played all right.
It's, Yeah, like you just it's not good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Highest PFF.
It's like, hey, okay, so what? Your boss, you know, demoted you and gave you a pay cut. What are you so upset about? It's not like you're living on the streets.
Right.
Yeah, there's degrees to all of this. All right. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Man. Yeah. How did that guy figure out a way to dress up like trying to charade as a positive thinking guy while being the most negative guy on earth?
I don't know.
You gotta listen. Listen, buddy. You gotta take the day off. You got to go home, and you got to sit and think about where you are in life, all right?
You might like
that.
That's
where I'm concerned about you and your attitude and the way you react to things.
Yep. All right. It is so decreed by Pope Zaza. Take the day off, 9631. By the way, best PFF score on offense, C.J. Stroud for the Houston Texans.
Yeah. Well, C.J. did really well when under pressure, and that's how it looked like at times.
9 of 10 for over 100 yards. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And now there were also times, though, where I think CJ still looks a little skittish in the pocket. I think last year did a little bit of damage, and I can't blame him for still being skittish behind that offensive line. The offensive line wasn't it wasn't the complete and total disaster that you felt like after the game, but there's times where he's got to figure out, all right, can I sit here and be comfortable in this pocket,
yeah,
even though it's clean for now, versus, you know, what happened last year when he would try to do that? It's a tough spot to be in as a quarterback.
All right, so some leftovers from the game on Sunday. I had a chance to rewatch it yesterday, and I know you've rewatched it too, Seth. The very first play of the game, like, this is kind of a throwaway and watching it the first time because, you know, we were all still getting our food out of the fridge and popping our drinks and things like that up here in the live lounge, getting ready. So I didn't really watch the opening kickoff. Damian Pierce just letting the ball roll through the landing area right in front of him and then going and kneeling on it in the end zone, essentially costing the team at least however many yards he would have got if he had just scooped it up and tried to return it. For those who don't know, if the ball lands in the landing area, if the ball lands between the 20 and the goal line and it hits the ground, and then rolls into the end zone, it comes back out to the 20. If it goes into the end zone in the air, it goes out to the 35. That's an important distinction. So the ball came back out to the 20-yard line, where if Damian had just been aware and scooped the thing up, the Texans would have been starting, I would guess, probably at least maybe 8 to 10 yards ahead of that. And it's a little thing. And at the time, it doesn't feel like a lot. But once you know how that game ended with all the mistakes and the penalties, special teams wasn't great in this game, I didn't think. On the rewatch, it's one of those things that's a little infuriating.
It's the only thing that I wonder about, and I hesitate because this new rule is new to all of us, is I don't know exactly what the specific rules are on that. You know, like when somebody catches a punt with their feet on like the 1 yard line or whatever and tries to return it, you understand there's time tested rules for that. I don't know exactly how they handle this specific situation.
Okay.
So it didn't look good. I'm guessing that you're 100% correct to be upset about that. And I think you're probably correct, too, because there's at least one other instance in the game where, it was bad. It looked like last year exactly because Damian is in pass protection in the backfield.
Oh,
and it looks like he's checking the Mike linebacker to see if he blitzes. And the Mike backer doesn't blitz. So Damian just releases out of the backfield, ignoring completely that one of the other linebackers is indeed blitzing. Meanwhile, the offensive tackle is just getting completely destroyed and unaware, or just really couldn't pick it up. And Damian just leaves. And Stroud himself was also unaware of exactly what was going on. So it was Stroud directing traffic and then having to rely on guys like Damian to also, you know, think on the fly at times and everything. There's going to be some hiccups. We warned you of this. I think the Rams did a really good job, perhaps, of knowing that CJ was doing a lot more of directing traffic and setting the calls, and were able to, I think there were a few times at least where they were able to dupe CJ into thinking the pressure was coming from one side, and it came from the exact opposite side.
It looked like it. You're exactly right. It looked like it. The first 2 minutes of this game had the Damian Pierce kickoff follies, a holding penalty, which I know was questionable, but it was a penalty. Got called a penalty. A basic stunt getting pressure, and then a delay of game penalty. This is in the first 2 minutes of the game. These things all happened with the Texans. So what were you doing all summer?
I know, we're right. Yeah, you're on your scripted plays. Here you go. And you get a delay of game while you're on the plays that you've practiced.
Yes.
That you've gone through walkthroughs at the hotel with, all of that.
Okay, yeah. I'm very curious your thoughts on this. I think Ariante Urshery is going to want to burn the tape of this game, by and large. I thought the little bit of time he spent on the left side when they had to bring Blake Fisher in when Cam Robinson went out, I watched him on those reps. Those reps were better. It was only four reps, but they were better than, and it was hard to be worse than he was at times on the right side of the offensive line. But what did you think of Ariante Urshery having rewatched?
A lot of what I expected versus this defensive front. I think he did some good things in the game. I think he shows a general awareness, but he's a rookie who's flip-flopping in his first NFL game versus one of the best defensive fronts in the league. And there were times where, you know, some of the things I was concerned about, just where he doesn't quite still know how to use all that size and strength he has. He kind of gets caught bending at the waist at times instead of being in a good football position. He lets guys get into his body. Like he's going to have to work through that, and that's what you expect out of a guy in his first game.
Yeah.
So if he had come out there and just shut everybody down, you wouldn't be able to shut me up this morning. We'd be talking about Ariante Urshery every single segment all week.
Yeah.
But that's where you are with him right now.
There were a couple.
I'm perturbed that Cam Robinson, the veteran, isn't the guy who can be trusted to go left and right. If you're going to pay a guy a good chunk of money to be a bridge tackle or whatever to make it easier to get your younger guy involved, maybe we go with a guy that you could feel comfortable putting on the right side of the line.
That is a take. I've not heard anybody say that. I like that. You're the vet. You're in your ninth season in the league and you're getting paid $12 million a year. Get over on the right side, buddy. We're paying you a lot of good. We're paying you good, hard, cold cash to be a tackle for this team. Take one for the squad. There were just a couple plays where I'm like, ah, crap. Ursary's going to be on the next cut-up of Jared Verse that comes out in, like, week 8.
You're going to have to watch these all up.
Yeah,
you're going to have to watch the NFL Top 100 next year and
right
see.
Into his lap. Yeah, well, maybe Ursary will get to do some of those vignettes. They'll interview him. What was it like getting dominated by Jared Verse in your first game ever in the NFL? Nico Collins had 5 targets in this game. I'm not telling anybody anything new that you guys didn't already know. This was a big thing. I went back and looked up the numbers, Seth.
Mm-hmm.
In 2024, last season, with Bobby Slowick, Nico Collins had fewer than 6 targets. Keep in mind, he only had 5 on Sunday for a full game. He only had fewer than 6 targets last year twice. Both times they were games he left in the first quarter. The Buffalo game where he left with the hamstring injury, the Tennessee game in week 18 where they took all the starters out once they hit all their statistical milestones.
Yeah.
And Nico actually had 5 targets in the first quarter of that game. Say what you will about Bobby Slowick. There was never an issue with Bobby Slowick getting the ball, at least targeting his best playmaker last year.
And again, CJ said this after the game, the Rams did a good job of showing a lot of cover 2, zone stuff, deep zone stuff, that disguised also to make it really tough to get Nico downfield. And I sent one of those clips to Cecil Shorts. It was a classic. Like, I'm like, all right, I'm pretty sure this is cover 2, but I'm not sure because this doesn't look like your normal. The Rams aren't operating by the normal rules that you operate. And
yeah.
Cecil said he watched it about 9 times and was like, yeah, because I'm asking. There was this one specific play where CJ had thrown over the middle on a 3rd and long. And I was curious about, all right, should CJ have waited and seen what happened downfield with Nico? And really, probably not. You know, like if the Rams were dead set on taking Nico Collins out of the game, you got to find your production elsewhere. And that's where they fall short. I mean, it's the same thing. This is what felt like last year was, okay, they want to take Nico Collins out of the game. Great. You know what that does? That creates opportunities elsewhere. And it just that's not how it worked out. They were stuck in the same position of like, well, they took away our Nico. What do we do?
I don't know.
Kick
field goals. Okay, we'll just kick field goals. Yeah, 3 of them.
And they did a lot of what Bobby Slowick would do too, is running a whole lot of condensed formations where you got tight ends and fullbacks and everybody else down in the box.
Yeah.
And if you're gonna run the ball, great, but you're probably not gonna be churning yardage in that, unless you're really, really good and physically dominating on the line of scrimmage. And the they're Texans' not. Offensive line, they're not going to dominate that defensive front.
God, not that
one. They were better than last year. And I know this sounds like I'm trying to get an attaboy for a C-plus or something, but it is big. The fact that there were zero tackles for a loss in the game, mm-hmm. when they were running as much as they were with the running backs that they were running with, that is it's a substantial step forward. It's not what's going to win you the Super Bowl,
no.
But they weren't shooting themselves in the foot with getting tackled for a loss. For a 5-yard loss on first down, they were shooting themselves in the foot with penalties,
yep.
and sacks at times. But the reason that the average third down was 3rd and 11 was more because of penalties and the 3 sacks than it was anything else. So that is progress.
Yeah,
it's not as bad in that regard. At
okay,
least.
Well, the penalties were bad, and this is the thing. And going back and watching, I will credit them this. They are. They were quite diverse and versatile when it came to their types of penalties. 8 different types of penalties committed by 11 different guys, Seth. 11 penalties committed by 11 different. So we didn't have a Laramie situation where we had one guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we had 11
guys. That's complimentary transgressing.
It's right exactly there. Right. We had mm-hmm. 11 guys making little mistakes instead of one $26 million guy making 5 mistakes with penalties. And the second half was, I mean, and I'm being jokey about this. The second half was, but the third quarter was absurdly bad. Illegal use of hands by Stingley. Illegal shift by Jaden Higgins. False start by Laken Tomlinson. The two most brutal penalties of the game for me for the Texans were the ones that were towards the end of the third quarter. Blake Fisher comes in for 4 snaps, and one of them, he's grabbing the face mask. I think it was a Verse or Young, one of the two.
It was Young.
Yeah. Like he's getting pushed off the ledge.
Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah.
Either one, whoever it was.
It was egregious. It was egregious.
Grabs and he's falling backwards, holding on to it like he's falling off a building. And then, dude, Daryl Taylor, the offsides at the end of the third quarter. Like the only reason Matthew Stafford is at the line of scrimmage, because the play clock has more time on it than the game clock at that point. The only reason he's at the line of scrimmage in a game that they're leading is to try to draw you off sides. And with 3 seconds left in the quarter, he gives you a hut hut, and Daryl Taylor jumps into the backfield. What are you doing?
It's an unforgivable mistake, and yet it's one that I have to confess to making. I did it versus the Colts, and I knew that they were in a situation. It was Peyton Manning. With the Texans in a year that was not going well for us at all. I think it might have been our 2-14 season. Mm-hmm. But this is what happened. I knew they were trying to draw us offsides, but you know what Peyton did? He had the tight end like go into motion, but he like jumped back to go into motion. And I thought, screw this. And I jumped offsides and hit the tight end. And I got flagged. They would later outlaw that. They would later outlaw it, but I basically had to be the test case to show the world that, no, this is unjust.
Oh, wow.
Should I have chosen that moment to do it? Perhaps not. But I felt that this is wrong, and I will not abide it.
So there is a Seth Payne rule out there now.
It's not. I mean, it was like 10 years later, and it had nothing to do with me.
I'm going to call it the Seth Payne rule. That's good for the show.
It was so bogus. It was, he would go on a hard count, and the tight end would jump back really brutally. And I remember making the conscious decision of like, well, screw this.
Yeah.
And I tried to draw the penalty, and no, they flagged the
whole thing. You stand over him, tell him to go die? Do you remember who the tight end was? Was it Dallas Clark?
In my mind it was, but yeah. That might be me just trying to make it seem like a cooler situation.
Yeah, it's cooler if it's Dallas Clark.
I'm pretty sure it was Dallas Clark. Totally. It was definitely a white guy. And it was bogus, man.
Yeah.
It was bogus.
I'm glad
Darrell Taylor's got to be smarter than that. These pre-snap penalties, the illegal shifts especially, that, again, felt like Bobby Slowick.
Yes.
Felt like, all right, come on, you guys. Remember, this is, you know why it's personally devastating to me? It's because I said the one thing that I think that we're going to see out of this offense is that it's going to be a cleaner operation. I feel like from watching training camp, it looks like it's going to be a cleaner operation, and yet it was not a cleaner operation.
It's what we were sold. D'Amico said that when he was asked in the week leading up to the first game, what do you notice differently about the offense this year than last year? Boy, they're on the details. They are sure on the details, you know, and perfecting their job. And 11 penalties, it wasn't all the offense with the penalties, but the penalties on the offense – I don't think they got a single holding penalty. The penalties on the offense were all procedural.
No, they got
things.
A holding penalty.
They did. Yeah. I'm not looking. Yeah. I transcribed all the penalties from the game, from the box score into this, and there's not a single hold.
It says right there in the show prep first quarter a hold on Cam.
Oh,
Robinson.
Cam Robinson, you're right. Yeah, you're right. It was a bad.
You
call,
wrote
though.
It down.
It was a bad call. Yeah, I was looking for holding. I just wrote hold. all right, Payne and Pendergast with you. On a Tuesday, let's get to headlines. This is a huge series for the Astros. If you're trying to get a bye in the first round of the playoffs, big series for the Astros. We'll get to in headlines. We got Texans news, the football talk in this segment. It's presented by Paramount Plus. Can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game like live every Sunday all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's like $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, let's get to headlines. Let's start with the Texans. The headline from yesterday, Cade Stover, tight end, who got the most snaps at tight end. He got, I think, 57% of the snaps, and Dalton Schultz got 53%. I mean, Cade Stover was a big part. It was planning on being a big part of the offense, suffered a broken foot. At some point in that game on Sunday, he was still in the game with under 3 minutes to go in the game, and never at any point were the cameras focused on him leaving the field. He left the field after an illegal shift penalty by him with 2.5 minutes to go in the game and then never returned. So we don't know how severe it is.
Yeah, and I think the thing about Stover is, and I could say this about most of the guys on the offense, they're going up against a really good defensive line with the Rams, and they did some good things in that game. Just obviously, they didn't do enough good things in that game. But I think his development as a guy that had only played tight end for a couple of years in college, last year was a rookie, he was headed on a trajectory where you could say, you know what, this might end up being a really good fourth round pick.
Yes.
And what's it mean for this offense this year? It's not a death blow or anything, but he was one of those guys who in the game, there were times where, okay, you're going against Jared Verse, you're going against Byron Robinson, you're going to have a hard time, but there are also some good examples of him blocking those guys on run plays or holding up in pass protection. So it's not a devastating blow, but it's definitely doesn't help much right
no,
at this moment.
No, it doesn't. D'Amico Ryans meets with the media today. The question I'd like to see asked, and I'm sure it will get asked, is will Cade Stover, and we should mention Jake Andrews, reported by Aaron Wilson, has a high ankle sprain, and he's going to be out for the foreseeable future. The thing I'd like to know, are these guys going on injured reserve, designated to return, or are they going to keep him on the 53 and just make them inactive each week? I think that would give an indication at least to the severity of the injuries here, you know?
And you got to kind of parse those out a little bit or try to pace yourself with the injured IR designated to return, because you only get, is it six or eight? You get eight of them.
It's eight. You get eight. And, you get two more if you make the postseason.
Yeah, Jalen Reed is the only occupant right now. Yep. But if you burn them all up in week one, you kind of left out of options. But Cade Stover would be 100% a guy that they would want to do it for.
Oh, I think Andrews would too. I think if they were unlimited, I think they for sure want those guys back. Yeah.
But what you want to find out is, okay, is this a desperation move or is it like an Isak Paredes where, hey, he might come back, but it doesn't feel so hot? Yeah.
And to be clear, the answer will not satisfy us. I just want to see the question get asked and see what D'Amico says. Monday Night Football last night, the Vikings beat the Bears 27-24. If you missed it, boy, the NFL had really good luck with the Sunday night and Monday night games in terms of the watchability. A Sunday night game between the Ravens and the Bills might end up being the game of the year. 41-40, the Bills won that one on a big comeback. This, too, now this was a road comeback, but the Vikings were down 17-6, Seth, in the third quarter after J.J. McCarthy threw a pick six. And they were able to come back in the fourth quarter. They outscored the Bears 21-7 the rest of the way. And that revamped Bears offensive line looked really good early and looked really bad in the fourth quarter of this game.
They did. And it's week one, so I think that probably if you're a Bears fan, lean into that first three quarters of it and be angry about the fourth quarter falling apart like that. But then for the Vikings, I mean, with J.J. McCarthy, who's basically a rookie, you know, second year in the NFL, but he got injured last year in camp. So I think him showing up in the fourth quarter the way he did. And then also, when you've got a coach who got the very best you've ever seen out of Sam Darnold the previous year, you can say that J.J. McCarthy was just a product of Jim Harbaugh's offense in college. Cool. You know what? I think O'Connell's the kind of guy that can get the absolute most out of his quarterback. And whatever J.J. McCarthy's ceiling is, I think that's a really promising sign what he did in the fourth quarter yesterday.
Yeah, the pick six in that game, the pick six should have been a death blow. The Vikings were doing nothing offensively with, to your point, essentially a rookie at quarterback. After the pick six, they really honed in on O'Connell and McCarthy, and you just watch O'Connell kind of managing the situation with McCarthy, and I don't know what he was saying to him at the time, but you can tell what bedside manner looks like with a guy who just had a devastating moment in a game. And O'Connell was like, he was very cool about it, and I think that transferred over to his quarterback in the fourth quarter. J.J. McCarthy was excellent the rest of the game. He was really good.
I think when it comes to those two primetime games and how exciting they were at the end, I'm guessing the Bills game, the ratings still won't reflect it. They're already out. I just don't look at the TV ratings all that much.
Yeah.
Because so many people, including myself, had abandoned the game at that point. I thought, well, look at the way the Ravens have been playing. And Derrick Henry, he never fumbles the ball. Like, this will be it. There we go. So
and that's what happened.
It.
Yeah.
I didn't see it at all.
Bills fans agreed with you. They were leaving the stadium in droves on Sunday night.
Talked to a friend of mine who was at the game, John Petruzzi, and he stayed the entire time. But he did not. He seemed, by 5 p.m. yesterday, he seemed a little worn out.
Oh, yeah. East Coast?
That was an emotionally taxing that was an emotionally taxing game.
I was taxed, and it was only like 10:15 here. I can imagine if you went to the game, had to go home. Hell, yeah.
Had to drive his RV home.
Oh, he's
one. After spending the night before in the Buffalo tailgate area, too.
Oh, God.
Like, John, we're getting too old for this, man. Dude. I don't know if you're built for this anymore.
Amy and I, that is the place, Seth, that we were, and I promise we'll get to the Astros here. You know, we do our bye week trip every year where we go somewhere else to go see an NFL game. God, we were rooting hard for Buffalo to have a home game that weekend. I want to go to a Bills game so badly. Now we're going to a Ravens game and a Commanders game Sunday and Monday. So that'll be pretty good, but I want to go to a Buffalo game. Speaking of Buffalo, Toronto is kind of near Buffalo, right? That's where the Astros are this week for the next 3 days. They're in Toronto taking on the Blue Jays, the resurgent Blue Jays this season, who have the best record in the American League right now. So I think it's fair to say this could be a preview of what we might see in the ALCS, possibly. The Astros are 4 games back of the Tigers for the 2 seed, 4.5 games back of the Blue Jays for the 1 seed. I think it's safe to say that if the Astros have aspirations of getting into that top 2 and getting a bye in the first round of the playoffs, which could be extremely valuable, they got to take at least 2 out of 3 in this series from the Blue Jays, I would say. Can't get swept.
Hey, sometimes you can't pull it off versus a team like the Rangers.
Well, I don't even look at quality of opponent with these guys anymore.
I know. The Rangers. The Rangers series did not fill me with inspiration. It did not inspire me. So yes, do this versus the Blue Jays, and I'll be in my incredibly erratic emotional state. Will swing way up. Yes.
Luis Garcia, Jason Alexander, Christian Javier are the 3 pitchers. Hey, one last thing. Headlines. Congratulations, friend of the show, Steve McKinney. I saw this on social media last night. I saw Steve retweet it. His son, Hunter, who is an offensive lineman at Lake Creek High School in Montgomery, I'm guessing I'm doing the math, maybe not even alive when you were teammates with Steve, I'm guessing, Seth, right? Like he was
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, this is 19 years ago. He's a senior in high school, so it's...
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know if Steve held him out for 2 years, you know, doing the old Texas high school football thing.
Steve did tweet that this is something he's prayed for since the day Hunter was born. He committed to the Aggies yesterday.
I wouldn't. I think Steve. Steve is a very very smart dude, and I could see him holding Hunter out for like 3 years,
three or four years
before pre-K.
Yeah,
yeah, to get him ready.
Little snot-nosed toddler. Now he's excited because his insurance rates just went down. He turned 25. And he's going to be a freshman at A&M. Yeah.
No, but I can't remember if he was born while we were teammates or not, but when I met him when he was like 11 years old, I was like, oh, that kid looks like a potential future NFL offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Just like his brother and his uncle.
Yep. And at the very least, he will be a collegiate offensive lineman, committed to A&M yesterday. So congrats to Hunter. Congrats to the old man. That's a big deal. So good stuff. Those are your headlines for today. Hey, it's a Texans Ticket Tuesday. On Sports Radio 610, you got to make sure you're listening in the next hour for your shot at a pair of tickets in the bullpen. Texans home opener, Bucks prime time, 6 o'clock kick. You got a chance to win tickets here in the 7 o'clock hour. Up next, Ross Tucker will join us. We'll get his thoughts on week one, get his thoughts, see where the Texans stack up after week one on his power rankings. And I'm sure he's got thoughts on the Texans offensive line as well. We'll talk to Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, coming up next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.